Welcome back, folks, to this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. Right now we're waiting on connecting with Trey Smith, who's expected to appear here with us. I want to thank each and every one of you for your belief and your trust in us, and thank you for joining us as well. Are you a small business looking to grow but can't afford the big price tag, folks, associated with advertising on a nationally syndicated radio show like Sean Hannity or Herman Cain, that kind of program? Are you looking to get the most exposure for your product or for your service on a limited budget? Folks, advertising on the Hagman and the Hagman Report is the answer to your needs. We are unlike any other radio show in existence, dominating the popular 7 to 10 slot. And we're number one in a lot of venues. And we are now, and I made a horrendous mistake, we've been downloaded in 114 countries. We had over 75 million downloads of our podcast last year alone. And we're just a couple of detectives with a combined 40 years of experience, investigative experience. Socially conservative, proudly and unapologetically Christian, that's your platform. And that's where you can advertise. We've created a special limited offer that will provide you with national and international exposure at a fraction of the price of nationally syndicated big talkers, while getting your business out to very loyal customers in front of millions, and I mean literally millions of people, potential clients and customers. You can experience the same level of advertising as such places as Omaha Steaks, Pro Flowers, Indochino, ZipRecruiter, same level of advertising right here at Hagman and Hagman. You'll reach the same number of potential clients and customers by advertising on the Hagman and Hagman Report. Simply do this. Send an email to opportunities@hagmanreport.com. That's opportunities@hagmanreport.com. One more time, opportunities@hagmanreport.com. Or go to hagmanreport.com. Scroll down until you see, get your business started, or you'll see the opportunities section there for more information about what we've got to offer. And one more time, opportunities@hagmanreport.com. Joe.
Well, if our guests, we're going to jump into some news here. Got a few pieces of information on an interview Trump gave to a German newspaper, Bild. And the article here says that this adage will take on a certainly new meaning as Donald Trump reshapes the world. Trump was very critical of NATO, saying that NATO was obsolete in his interview. And he had criticisms for Angela Merkel. And an exclusive interview he gave, Trump unleashed a volley of verbal attacks on Europe, hailing Britain's decision to leave the European Union through Brexit and saying more countries were going to quit the European bloc. He also said a long time ago that NATO had problems. Number one is it was obsolete because it was designed many, many years ago. And he went on to say that countries involved in NATO are not paying what they're supposed to pay. And it's becoming obsolete because it wasn't taking care of terrorism. He also was very critical of Angela Merkel and talked about the foreign policy with Germany and the immigration issues that Germany's having. And along with NATO, he talked about Europe as a whole and how more countries were going to leave the EU, just like Brexit. And folks, if you want, you can read the article. It's on a number of places online. Read the interview. But he talked about the one thing that's interesting that he's been dealing with here is the open border policy. He called Angela Merkel's open border policy a catastrophic mistake and said that, you know, the UK was very smart because in leaving the EU, because what Germany and Angela Merkel are doing is a means to an end to destroy Germany. And I think he makes some very good points in this interview. There's a lot more of what he said. But he focused on one, NATO needing to change or be tossed by the wayside. And with Angela Merkel, the last Democratic leader left, you know, from the last 10 years, has an election coming up. And she continues to, you know, talk about how open borders are great for Germany with one side of her mouth and the other side behind the scenes. There's been some reports of what she's been saying about how, you know, how does the people of Germany not know what's going on and how bad this is for her and her political party and her nation and the citizens of the nation. And the citizens are catching on. They see what's going on. There's a lot of underreported immigration in Germany, much more so than they've reported, and they see the problems throughout their culture with terror attacks and the increase of violence and rapes and all kinds of just crazy things that come with the clashing of civilizations. Switching to another story here. I don't know if you saw this today. The FBI arrested the wife of Omar Mateen, the man who carried out the attack on the Pulse nightclub in Orlando, Florida. She's due in court tomorrow. She was taken into custody by the FBI in San Francisco, where she resides.
I guarantee you, Joe, the entire family knew about this.
That's what the article from the New York Times says. They say that investigators believe that Miss Solomon, for hours after the attack, they came to believe she was not telling the truth about her husband's plan to carry out the rampage, and the criminal charges that she got could be due to her foreknowledge of the attack or helping Omar Mateen during or sometime after somehow.
And you know, you can't
tell me
she
was abused, and this was something that she didn't have control over. But the prosecutors have been looking at her since the shooting and have wanted to charge her, and now they finally pulled the trigger. And her first court appearance is tomorrow morning.
Right. No pun intended. Well, you know, folks, I don't even know how to break this news to you, but you know, right after Trump's victory, do you know that the Department of State? Do you know what happened at the Department of State? The Department of State actually held stress workshops after Trump's victory.
I mean, having to follow guidelines of ethics and morality?
No, just because the shock, the trauma of a Trump victory, the State Department held stress management sessions and counseling sessions and brought counselors in following Donald Trump's presidential election victory, providing employees tips on how to cope with change so they don't become paralyzed with or by fear. Now, let me tell you something, you bunch of wussy, snowflake, idiot, moron, imbecile people out there. All right? I'm going to tell you something. What a bunch of wussies. And there's another name, but I'm not going to use it. But you have to understand, you know, I'll tell you what stress is. Stress is waking up in the morning and working 12 hours a day as a waitress. Okay, or as a shop worker, or as a tree trimmer. Well, stress is waking up wondering if you're going to have enough money to put food on the table for your children and your family. Waking up in the morning and knowing that you've got to just work in not just one job but two jobs, or struggling to pay the rent or the mortgage. Or worrying about your sick family members who are dying of cancer. Or maybe it's your wife or your husband. That's stress. Not because of a Trump victory. That is a misallocation and a misuse of resources that, frankly, I'm not even sure we should have them. But what a bunch of pansies out there. And if you need that kind of counseling or treatment, I feel sad for you. Because what kind of life do you have? And I'm tired of hearing this, being paralyzed by fear. What kind of BS crap is that? Oh, I'm paralyzed by fear.
Well, you know,
my butt.
The culture that the left has been promoting in the universities and throughout their organizations has created this hypersensitive environment.
The left, yes.
They've cultivated it, they've babied it, and they've promoted it as something that not only is okay, but is how it should be. And from the microaggressions to, you know, any idea or opinion that is contrary to theirs is now, what do they call it? Trigger warnings. You know, people get triggered.
Trigger. Oh.
If you wanted to be...
Josh Tully has a great video, by the way. He's talking about this kind of stuff.
If you want to define it, I'm sure all of us get triggered every single day. We see things that are offensive and, you know, terrible. But these people are taking it to a new extreme. They're trying to get some kind of victim mentality. And the government and the universities are cultivating this victim mentality for some reason. And it could be to paralyze people with fear.
You know something?
I don't get it.
Wait a second.
You go through life, people. You're going to see things. You don't
there's no excuse for that. Don't say that.
I'm not giving an excuse. I'm saying that this was a carefully designed avenue of a mix between, you know, psychology and human emotions that they've learned to cultivate and foster and create chaos in the rest of society because of these people.
But when you think about this, here these people are, okay, in the State Department, and anyone, shame on you if you're working in this, if you have worked in the State Department, and by the way, we've had a number of people accessing, I'm just going to shut up there, but if you're working in the State Department or Foggy Bottom, that place needs to be fumigated, and the White House needs to be fumigated after this last regime. But let me tell you something. Think back to World War II or Vietnam or Korea. You had, and even Desert Storm for that matter, you had kids just out of high school, can't even grow a beard, getting their legs blown off by IED, getting shot at, shooting other people. Seeing beheadings in real time, seeing rapes and being okay, and yeah, PTSD indeed. But back in World War II, we had men come back from the war and Vietnam. And do you think that they were given these counseling sessions? No, you dealt with it. Look, when I was young, and I'm not saying, believe me, I'm not comparing myself to anybody, but I mean, look, I remember being a very, very young man and seeing the most gruesome and horrifying situations, car accidents and carrying limbs and putting them in body bag type things. And there was, I didn't go to any stress clinic. You know what I did? I had a beer or a drink. And I didn't drink. I'm not making an excuse. Don't send me the emails, all right? You know what I'm, you know what I'm saying. All right. Yeah. There you go. But see, so just because you didn't get your happy meal the way you wanted it, or just because you couldn't get your double, triple latte, cafe, whatever at your most expensive Starbucks piece of crap store, drink it black, by the way, and make it, you get a coffee pot, get a real coffee pot, and just shut up while you're at it. But this, come on, seriously, you know these people, and who's paying for it? We're paying for it. We're paying for it. You listening and watching this, you're paying for it because they're taking the time out of their workday, these hour sessions, to be counseled. It's okay, Mary. Everyone gets a participation trophy. We're not keeping score in this game.
I need some grief right counseling
to,
here.
It's not right to keep score.
We should get a grief counselor in here just to have on standby. You'd think that the way things go here sometimes that we would.
Believe me, Steve and I were talking on Saturday. It was a Saturday.
I don't know.
Yeah, you wouldn't know, but it was in the morning. And both Steve and I were like, it's time to die. That's it.
Well, I don't know that it's that time yet. I think you'd want to see where things go from here. You know, we've been, for the last, how many years, there's been really no hope with any politician that, or political movement that's gained power in this country. It's been just a changing of the old guard in power. At least this time, something new is being presented, and is being presented as though
Donald Trump, you're talking about, now.
Right, right.
The Trump movie. And I believe that there's more about the movie.
There's
than
an
the
energy.
Man.
Yeah. There's a new, renewed optimism. I mean, think about when Obama got elected. We were paying attention to things back then, and that feeling of just like, oh no, this is going to suck.
This is really going to be
the shoes on the other foot now, though, with these people. You know, after 8 years of a Democratic president and having that. I guess there's some security, maybe, mentally, that comes for certain people, and just having. The president doesn't make that much of a difference for me. I mean, it's nice to have somebody in there that's not trying to, you know, squash your political affiliations or your religious affiliations.
Well, we don't know that
speech.
Yet, though.
No, we don't, and that's why I.
But I mean, I know what you're saying, and I trust. And again, don't, because I'll just delete them. Look. We don't know what Trump's going to do. And there's some things he can't do legally, constitutionally. But that didn't stop Obama, right? It didn't. But
do you see he released 10 more Guantanamo 10 more. Bay prisoners?
Yeah, send them over to what?
Oman.
Oman. That's right.
And
where they could be released back in and be assets for ISIS.
One of the things we talked about this Thursday that we didn't give it enough time, I don't think, because of what I read today, it was pretty interesting. The NSA expansion of allowing 16 or 17 other government agencies to get personal information about individual Americans, where before the NSA would, before they sent specific requested right. information off to intelligence agencies, they would remove personal information, information of innocent people involved in conversations, emails.
There was at least some level of...
And this is something Trump can't walk back, apparently, which is what I learned today.
Nope.
Through Obama's expansion of the NSA powers last week, this is not something Trump can change.
This is
an executive order or a policy decision.
Right.
He'd have to go through Congress to create new law to change it. And what the NSA has done is expand the amount of information and what information they will give to up to 17 intelligence agencies, from the FBI, the CIA, and all these other government law enforcement agencies. And now the personal information is not going to be redacted from that.
Right.
And there doesn't have to be request on specific conversations or... they give a name to the NSA, say we need, you know, the conversations from January 1st to January 7th that you have on record, email, text, phone calls.
And that
they only would give you, you know, one part of that conversation with some of the information that is not relevant taken out. Now they're going to turn over everything that they have to these agencies without any warrants.
And don't even sit there and say, well, I've got nothing to hide, so it really doesn't concern me.
That's not the point.
It's not the point. You're exactly right. Before I forget, I want to mention this. On the 8th, a week ago yesterday, at 10:30 at night, the FBI released 300 emails and 5 PDF packages on the, it's at the vault at the FBI. If you go to the FBI vault, you can find them and download them. We have downloaded them. I've been going through every single one. The first one is a recounting of the meetings and all of the emails, the email threads and how many there were and who was involved in the various meetings with the attorneys and such. Let me tell you something. You want to read something that'll curl your toes and hair and just make your eyeballs go out cartoon style. All right. It's this thing. And I want to know why. And I know that we've mentioned it before, but these 5 PDF packages that were released by the FBI, this basically references what you're saying, because the NSA has all of these emails by Hillary Diane Rodham, the Yak Clinton. Do we have a Yak? Oh man, no, he didn't. He didn't. Bring the
I don't
app
think we need
back.
To program that in.
Anyway, but see, that's fine. All in favor of the Yak? All in favor of the Yak? Raise your hand.
The Yak is extinct.
1, 2, 3, 4. Anyway, but I've been going through these. These are unbelievable. The redactions. I think there was one section. There were 37 complete pages redacted. It was just, or 33, it was out of 47, I guess it was. It was just an amazing, however, what was provided certainly shows the level of complicity and criminality by Hillary Diane Rodham Clinton. And the best part of it. You know what? The FBI verified that foreign governments got the information from the DNC.
Yeah, wasn't there like 5 or 6?
There was at least 6 that were verified. But it was interestingly worded in my view anyway, on this. But so don't tell me. I mean, so we're going through them. And I've been going through them, and I've got to tell you, this is something to read, something to behold. If you go to FBI, the vault on the FBI section, you can find the 300 emails that were just released at, I think it was 10:37 p.m. last Sunday, a week ago Sunday, on January 8th. And that within that, within those emails is verification that the DNC and Hillary, as Secretary of State, they were hacked. And what's this about? She only wanted one device. There were 13 devices associated with Hillary.
Yeah, there were.
What a number, right?
Mobile devices, hardware devices. Yeah. She had the server in her bathroom in her New York Chippewa home.
Yeah, and
more on Clinton and what you said earlier. Clinton Global Initiative to lay off employees, shut down amid dwindling donations. We mentioned this in the beginning of the show, but I just want to hit some other points on this because it's sure. The timing is suspect, and what's said in this article gives me a few ideas of what's really going on. The Clintons are moving ahead with plans to downsize their controversial foundation network of offshoots, a decision carried out as the powerful family's political influence wanes and its once lengthy donor list shrinks.
Oh, what are they going to do?
22 additional employees were announced that they were going to be laid off from the Clinton Global Initiative, known for its gathering of high-powered leaders and celebrities. The layoffs are tied to the decision to shutter CGI that originally was announced on August 22nd in a letter from former President Bill Clinton. Now, at the time, apparently, the Clintons were under pressure to resolve the potential conflicts of interest with their foundation, as well as Hillary being the nominee for the Democratic presidential race. So this is something that they apparently got the ball rolling back in August. But if you look at the headline of the title, Clinton Global Initiative to Lay Off Employees, Shut Down Amid Dwindling Donations. This has been a foundation that's been around for decades. Why are their donations Why are their donations dwindling right now? Right after she loses the...
That was when Clinton took office. It was 1997. Go ahead. Yeah, why now? Well, I mean, she's been... She
ran in the primary against Obama in 08.
Right.
She got the secretary position, and she ran for president this last year in 2016. She was a New York senator for a few years, maybe longer, back in the 2000s. But she hasn't had aside from being Secretary of State and running for office two times in the last 8 years, the Secretary of State job is the only position of influence she held. And Bill Clinton.
And senator. No, she was the first lady, then senator, then Secretary of State. But the Secretary of State.
She was elected
position.
A senator, right. And she was appointed to Secretary of State.
Right.
She ran for president twice, lost in the primary to Obama, and lost in the general election to Trump this time around. But after all this time, they sent in over almost $100 million in donations. Well, this might just be from the Austrian government. This is one example. The Australian government decided against renewing its partnership with the Clinton Foundation, and other countries, you know, were reducing what they gave in 2016 from double-digit millions to single-digit millions. But the timing seems very strange to me, as she lost the election. She obviously sees the writing on the wall that there's not going to be another go around for her in politics, at least not on the national level. I've heard rumors of her running for New York City mayor, which I don't know if she'll do that. But
that'd be fun.
She lost her power. She lost her influence. And now all of a sudden the donations are evaporating. People are being laid off. What drove those donations in the first place? It wasn't a charity.
85.
It wasn't charitable action.
85 countries got, or 85 individuals or and or representatives of the countries via the Clinton or via the Clinton Foundation. Donations to the Clinton Foundation, or I'm sorry,
and my question
out of 160, more than half donated to the Clinton Foundation, and the Secretary of State, she made decisions in favor of those people.
What in the process of her losing her political power and influence would stop her, if she was really raising money for charitable purposes, what would stop her from wanting to do that if that was the intention of the Clinton Foundation?
Well, she's got no swag now.
Losing an election, you wouldn't think she's still a former Secretary of State. She's still a
This is pay to play.
Exactly. Well, she's got no influence. And that is exactly
what have you done for me lately?
You're right. I mean, that says it all right there.
Nothing.
The timing It's like she's cashing out.
But it doesn't matter because, see, okay, you go back to mid-2016. October 2016. Go back to that. The Justice Department, the Wall Street Journal had reported that there was an ongoing FBI Clinton Foundation investigation, but the Justice Department has not given it investigative power. So they're accountable to no one. And by the way, since day one, the Clinton Foundation, when you open up a 501c3, you've got to be very specific in your purpose, and you can't stray from that purpose. Otherwise, you're in violations of the tenets of the 501c3. And I'm trying to remember who did it. I think Charles Ortel did a wonderful series on this, videos and audios. Charles Ortel, if you want more information. He's a financial guy. He looked into the financial shenanigans of GE, but he gets right into this very issue. But you cannot, for example, if you're going to open up a 501c3 as tending to or with the subject of we'll say helping people in Iceland, you're limited to that. Now, if you stray from that purpose, you're in violation of your charter. So. They've
nothing
been in violation
of these people.
Well, it doesn't. Nothing matters to these people. They should be in flipping jail. I want to see Hillary Clinton in prison orange and behind bars. And right back. Of the Hagman and the Hagman Report. Apparently Trey Smith won't be joining us tonight, so if you're hanging on for Trey and if that's why you're listening, well then my apologies extended to you. I think what we're going to do is next top of the hour, we're going to throw open the phone lines, take some calls. Joe's going to give out the number here momentarily, but before I give it to Joe, folks, if you haven't done so already, T.C. Joseph, Next Generation series of novels. This guy, please, oh, is it a fantastic series? He's a great writer. In this thrilling series of novels, T.C. Joseph takes us into the lives of three families in a world where conspiracy theories and Bible prophecies collide. I just got word from a good friend of mine who finished the last book, Precipice, who said it was the best of the three. And he, even before we began talking about this, he had gotten into book one, which was Precipice. There are three books to this series. Precipice is book one, book two is Pentecost, and book three is Penance. And Penance is just fantastic. You read all three, they're fantastic. And they're my neighbor Jack uses them as well to give out to people at his church to awaken people. So, Bukirkus reviews. Just fabulous reviews. Blue Ink reviews, fabulous. And it's a little rough to get good reviews from these places. Your book's got to be worth it. T.C. Joseph's just a tremendous writer. His witty style, fascinating characters, they provide a great read for one and all. That is T.C. Joseph, This Generation series of novels, book one, Precipice, book two, Pentecost, book three, Penance. And what a fantastic, and I mean a fantastic read. Thank you so much, T.C. Joseph, a good friend of the program. And one of these days, I'd like to grab him and get him on the air. I really would. He's a fascinating guy. So, at any rate, so we're going to open the phone lines for your calls on the top of the final hour. Want to hear from you. If you can keep it, concise, short, we can get through a lot of callers, preference to first time callers. And we're going to talk some more about the inauguration because look, from the day before the inauguration until days after, there will be, I guarantee you, trouble on the streets. Now, I would like to remind everyone again, 9-minute, 8-minute video at, just go to HagmanReport.com with the article and the video that I did, and some great writers too, by the way, at HagmanReport.com. John Rappaport has an article. Others have Steve Menking have him, articles up. So I just really, really would urge everyone to go to HagmanReport.com, for the newest articles, but the video as well. We do expect trouble at the inauguration, low level disruptions. There's going to be 35,000 security and police force out there at the inauguration, but you know something, anything can happen, and I do believe it will. We are going to have a special coverage. Eric, are we allowed to have, can we, Friday? What you doing Friday? Okay, what's that? You'll be here during the day, like 11 to 2? And I want to announce this because this is one thing that, if you can believe this, I took a nap before the program. Office, no. to have a couch in the office is just so wonderful. Anyway, we're going to be here from 11 a.m. till 2 p.m. on Friday covering the inauguration. And then, of course, our regular program at 7, from 7 to 10, covering the balls, the inauguration balls, and, of course, the cleanup on aisle 6, the cleanup on Constitution Avenue. Right. That's going to happen because of these deadbeat, these Rosie O'Donnell wannabes, you know.
I was on Dave Hodges last night. We talked about the inauguration for a while.
Did he make you get off? Did he push you off of him?
No.
Oh, come on.
What I think is going to happen, I think it's going to be eventless as far as problems. You're going to have protesters. I don't know how close or how many will be able to get into these different crowds. In the history of inaugurations, there was a... The other night I couldn't sleep. Protests. There was on the History Channel. They went through, you know, past inaugurations and the transitions of power. I caught myself watching that for a little bit. There's always minor problems, but the way that, I mean, we have the National Guard there, 5,000 people from the National Guard, mm-hmm. and they're not there to arrest people or they're just there to maintain order and make sure everything goes as planned. Law enforcement agencies there are who's in charge of arresting or stopping any potential threats from being carried out. And the way the city's locked down, I just don't... I mean, there's layers and layers and layers of security. I think the more of the problems will be outside the inauguration. I think it'll be more...
I agree. I do agree.
Civil disobedience, celebrity ranting, politicians. But I think that'll be the extent of it. I don't think we're going to see any major issues with the inauguration.
You talk about celebrity ranting. One of my least favorite people I've ever seen is someone called Samantha Bee. Yeah. She is one of the most potty mouthed, twisted. I mean, Samantha Bee makes Rosie O'Donnell look like Barbara Bush. Okay, I know that just messes with your head. I'm sorry. How about this? Samantha Bee makes Rosie O'Donnell look like Ivanka Trump. I don't know. She's got a potty mouth. She's got, the intellect of really, I don't know, but she's supposed to be an entertainer. What is it? What's her show? It's on TBS
I don't know.
Or something.
I've only heard of it, on another radio show. They were talking about that, show. It's like you remember that Comedy Central John Stewart show, it's kind of the same format. They edit the interviews to make the guests look stupid. And
she's got a talk show, but she came out in one of the commercials that I happened to see this weekend was a newspaper with Trump wins or something to that effect, next to a toilet and a woman puking in the toilet, and her, Samantha Bee, saying essentially that that's a reaction of all Americans. And it's just, isn't it something? 8 years ago, if a conservative or a Christian conservative would have taken that position against Obama, and many of us did.
Racist. Hateful.
Taken to the cleaners. Beat.
Birther. I mean, anti-American.
Yes.
That's kind of what I was getting at last hour when you talked about the, Snowflake generation,
yes,
PC stuff. No, I mean, we talked about in the past, especially when after the Obama election and covering all the scandals after that and the issues. And you can ask my dad. I hated George Bush. He was the worst president we ever had. And I think Obama's presidency is right up there with his. But yeah, they're feeling what people felt with Obama in 08, who were paying attention to what was going on.
That's right.
And they're getting away with a lot more because the liberal media is pretty much holds all the sway. At least they think they do, and they continue to act like they do, regardless of, you know, who they hurt or how they deceive people. But the country is divided, and it's become more divided over the 8 years Obama was president. And the media has played a big role in this with the Trump presidency. That it's
what happened to the peaceful transition of power? What happened to that? Weren't the progressive Marxists letting this idiots out there? The ones weren't they saying that we need a peaceful transition to power and calling when they thought Hillary Clinton was going to be the coronated queen
People have this, especially the leftists now have this perception like they have been getting their way for the last 8 years and getting it what they want.
Well, I think they have, haven't they?
I don't know. I think they've been deceived a lot too to think that things have gone, you know, the right way just because a certain person was in office.
You're being pretty generous right now.
I'm being centered. And that's all been taken away from them. These people are used to getting what they want. They're used to the influence that they wield, especially in the positions of power and all throughout the government. And any threat of disruption to the new status quo is a threat and is triggering all these people with their crazy thoughts and emotions, and they're being given, instead of being labeled as, you know, crazies and kooks like we were back in 08 and beyond,
mm-hmm.
they're being coddled with their crazy emotions, and they're being validated by the people in the media, which is creating an even more, a bigger atmosphere of division and psychoticness. If you will.
I got an email from someone, and I just had a laugh because this was in response to something I said about the inauguration, and I said last week, more progressives, more people who are associated with the progressives and the leftist mentality and the democratic mentality are buying guns. And this person, emailer, reminded me that, hey, our side is arming up too for a potential civil war. And I'm thinking, my goodness, okay, what a threat you pose. First of all, you're afraid of guns, especially the big, black, ugly ones. I'm talking about guns now. Just to be clear. And you've probably never shot one in your life. So you're telling me that you'd be presenting a threat to us. Well, yeah, my patootie, right? This is not going to happen. The inauguration, but this gets me about this, Joe. It's what you were saying. The inauguration of Trump to be our 45th president. Those people calling him illegitimate. And notice how it's okay for these, the 18, 19, 20. And I'll bet you, but before it's all said and done, you're going to have maybe 50 or 60 progressive Marxist, Leninist, communist pigs out there. And I mean that. And I'm not, you know, you might think I'm name calling, and I guess I am. I'll admit that. I am name calling because the slovenly nature of their dispositions to just demand tolerance on one hand when it's Obama and then to be so intolerant on the other hand.
That's their tactics. I mean, that's
it, like it is their tactics.
Main plank in their playbook is to, and you see it with, we saw it with the, you see it with this political correct culture. They want to be protected from whatever they don't agree with or whatever they find offensive, but they want to be able to push what they believe onto you. And you see that with all this identity stuff. Yes.
Don't call me a he or she. I'm offended if you call me a he or she, but you have to do it this way, or I'm going to have my feelings hurt. And then to turn around and have the media say, oh, you guys are saying it wrong. You're hurting all these people's feelings. You're offending people like it's some big crime. I'd say it's a right of every American is to be offended. I know that sounds weird, but this is America. People can say what they want to say as long as it's not inciting violence. There's no guarantee against not being offended. There's no guarantee against getting your way.
To be offended.
Right. And yeah. People think that, you know, they, since they are in this country now and, that they have all these, you know, protections where they can't hear or see things they don't agree with because they can't handle it or haven't been taught how to cope or handle things like this. It all boils down to a lack of intelligence, in my opinion.
You're exactly right. And I'm sorry for offending pigs, because pigs are intelligent animals, according to scientific research. I was looking at my notes here, wondering where that term came from. And I have a note that I wrote, I guess it might have been last week. Never wrestle with a pig, because two things happen. You both get muddy, and the pig likes it. That's where that came from. Anyway, yeah. So now you're right though, but the calls for this election to be illegitimate to me, and the stoking of the embers of social chaos, and the stoking of the embers of race along racial lines and along economic lines, calls for the assassination from those on the progressive political left who are upset at the outcome. This is causing fear and frustration among many of the people.
And after Obama was elected, and especially closer to the second term, we talked about, I mean, there was a possibility, there was threats of, you know, there was talk of him having to endure the same things, the assassination talk and whatnot. But it is more... Back then, it was just speculation, or if somebody got in trouble for making threats. Now, the difference is now, everything that, all the names we were called and the way we were portrayed in media for not agreeing with Obama and his policies, and that's all being turned around onto Trump. But you have the backing of the government, of the media, of the intelligence agencies to push that idea through for whatever reason. That's been what the media and stuff has been tasked with. Well, we do and we don't, I think. I think there's a lot more
that we
don't know.
Okay, the NDAA...
They're culminating an atmosphere for something to happen. There's going to be something that happens.
I think in the larger sense, obviously, the grand deception. Yes.
And it has to do with the way that they're pushing the minds of people to become so fragile. Maybe to a point where if we had another 9/11 type event, people would not be able to handle it mentally, and it would bring the country to its knees. I don't know. There's definitely something being done here behind the scenes that we are unaware of right now. Or it could be a lead up to a grand deception. But at that, I mean, people are so deceived now, even a lot of those people who are awake.
Well, we want to hear what you're most concerned with. We really do when we open up the phone lines at the top of the next hour. And
844-769-2944. It's 844-769-2944. We're going to open the phones after this next break.
We do want to hear what's on your mind. We haven't taken calls in such a long time. We miss talking to you, but we'd like to hear what's on your mind and what you're most concerned about. With the inauguration coming in, I do believe, Joe, and this, after seeing everything this past weekend and weighing everything and all of the intent to disrupt, I think that's really going to, yeah, I think there will be disruptions, and I think that there's going to be chaotic moments, and I would hate for anything to happen, but I'm looking more, as I said during that shorter video, I'm looking more toward the as my two individuals I spoke with, looking more toward the long game, because wouldn't it be something to bring Trump in, maintain his illegitimacy, and then drop, we'll say, as many of our guests have talked about, an economic crisis on his lap, or World War III, And you look at the last two presidents, both George Bush and Obama. In the first year of George Bush's presidency, you had 9/11.
Yeah.
First year of Obama's presidency, you had the stock market crash of 08.
Well, that was set up.
Right, it was. Right. But he was in. He just had taken power, and it was in the fall.
He inherited the right. last half of that.
But there's
the
something did happen at the very beginning of both the last two presidencies that were both major, both in the terrorist and political world and okay, the economy. So,
but let me okay, but I do believe as we look at this that the globalists want to destroy the country, and they're either going to do it through military means. We're going to burn the whole place down, baby.
And I don't think that's what they're going to do. I think it's going to be through economic means.
Okay. But wouldn't it be something to be able to do this without firing a shot, without making...
Using the economy
right.
and the chains of supply and demand as a weapon.
But I know. And we used to say no one would want to kill Obama because certainly no one wants to make him a martyr. And I believe that to be the case. And that the globalists, at least on the globalist side, the intellectual side of the globalists, I believe that they don't want to make Trump a hero. So why not create a crisis, drop it in his lap? But here's the thing that we've been watching, both Joe and I, and have mentioned it and want to lay this out for all of you. Have you ever seen someone in the Oval Office, a president, and I don't consider... You talk about legitimate. I don't consider Obama legitimate, but have you ever seen the actions of a president, of an outgoing president, engaged in so much? Look, we got troops right now moving over in Europe, Eastern Europe, against Russia, moving. And I know it's not a lot of troops; it's a very small amount of troops, but it's an irritant to Russia. You've got the Palestinian or the Paris talks. You've got the climate change issues and talks. You've got the mass, and I mean mass clemency for numerous felons. You've got all of these things taking place. Things that previous presidents did not do, with the exception of the clemency or the pardons, that is. So what's this guy doing? What is Obama's objective here? With all this stuff that he's pushing, Joe, I'm asking you, what's his objective? He's not
disrupt. Well, some of it is said to disrupt what Trump can do, and that goes with the surveillance issues that we talked about with the NSA. Trump won't be able to issue an executive order to reverse some of these things. He's going to have, if he really wants to reverse them, he's going to have to go through Congress and the Senate. And it's been said that Obama is doing more to disrupt what Trump can do than any other president in history. They say that most presidents avoid making major policy decisions or changes in their lame duck side of the presidency and after the election to avoid problems like this when a new president's coming into power. And with the amount of executive orders that he's putting out there, with the changes, the continuation of releasing people from Guantanamo Bay, expanding the surveillance powers, trying to keep Obamacare, the law, the land. He's really blocking up the channels of legislation for when Trump comes into office. And many people are saying he's doing it to a fault of disruption of Trump's agenda, which is something they haven't seen. They say it's beneath the presidency. It's unprofessional for him to do that. And if you look throughout history, presidents don't normally do that. From what I've heard, I haven't went through myself and looked.
You can go back in history, just the last
They're sucker punches.
Right, they are. They are. And I want to remind our listeners and viewers, if you have the chance, go to Josh Tolley, his channel, because it does go back, and we need to spend more time on this as well. It does go back to the NDAA Act of 2017. But listen to what Josh Tolley has to say. I think it was, maybe two or three videos he did ago, special uploaded videos. But he said basically it's the end of America by this legislation, and no one did anything to stop it. And what he was referring to specifically was Law S-2943. And inside this, and we had talked about this, inside this, by the stroke of Obama's pen, the Countering Disinformation and Propaganda Act also became law because it was included inside the 2017 NDAA Act. And I really think that we need to understand that this propaganda is being pushed out against us, the American people, and it's horrific. It's going to change how it's going to change how everything is working. And you know, there were calls to bring back the fairness doctrine. You remember that back in the early 80s, before I think it was before Reagan took it out, that you could only you had to have a balancing of opinions, and that's why there wasn't really good talk radio prior to 1985 for a while there. In the like from this the 70s late, I can't remember the time, but in that time period, a couple of decades before 85, there wasn't really good talk radio. But this particular act, this Countering Disinformation Propaganda Act, really has created the de facto Ministry of Truth. And Andrew Kerr talked about it, Brittany Pettibone and Tara talked about it. And Tara, remember, when she was on our show, broadcasting from the UK, had to be very careful about what she could say.
Because she could,
yeah, knock on the door, you know. Hey, Tara, you got to come with us.
Also, no, take it one of her neighbors to say that she said something derogatory to him. You don't have to have any proof or anything to bring charges. And I watched a part of a documentary a few weeks ago about hate speech laws in the UK and in Europe and how they are just designed to shut out and oppress any speech or idea they don't agree with or find uncomfortable. And it's very vague and broad in how they can interpret it and how they can...
But this is now under the Secretary of the Defense, their Department of Defense. This law, this Countering Disinformation Propaganda, the history of what
the
you're
talking
about.
The people who create disinformation and propaganda are the ones telling us what is disinformation and propaganda, which puts us in a disadvantage.
Well, sure, sure. So we really need to follow this carefully, and we really need to understand, because this goes back again to fake news, which again goes back to the substance of Pedogate, and the Clinton Foundation. And pretty soon we're not going to be able, if these become enforced, we won't be able to talk about this even with Trump as commander in chief or president, because this is not affected, or this is not superintended at that level. This is lower. Of course, he can change that through legislation, but it who knows? It could be a very uphill battle by then. And we want to be able to keep talking to you. We want to keep our programming to you, our broadcast to you, open to you. Even if we have to get a little dinghy offshore in international waters with a microphone, that'd be something, wouldn't it?
Coming up in the next hour, we're going to take your phone calls exclusively for the hour at 844-769-2944. That's 844-769-2944. You can call in now, and we will get to the calls as they come in the order that they are received. We want to hear your thoughts on the inauguration, on anything we talked about today in the news, as well as things we might have missed or not covered that you want to get more information on. Again, 844-769-2944. We'll be right back.